From the studios of KXAM, welcome to Tell the Truth Faster, hosted by Stuart Altshuler, marriage and family therapist. Stay tuned and learn how you can open your mind and soul to new possibilities in life. Now here's your host, Stuart Altshuler.
Welcome to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler. I'm a licensed psychotherapist, and this is a show where we deal each week with mental health issues from a holistic perspective, which means body, mind, and spirit, and finding a sense of balance between those. And we all know that the truth will set you free. The question we ask on this show is, how long are you willing to keep freedom on hold? Now, before we get into today's show, I want to acknowledge my sponsor, my first sponsor, and hopefully the first of many, which is the Rainbow Mobile Notary Services, Charles King. And his sponsorship is actually, as you're going to hear in a little bit, very relevant to what we're dealing with today's topic. The issue of end of life and care and things like that came into real prominence with the Terri Schiavo case in the last few months and the chaos that it caused. And what Charles's company, the Rainbow Mobile Notary Services, do is actually will make things easier for you to plan now to prevent those same problems from happening later. In terms of getting together the papers that most of us avoid dealing with, which happens to be durable power of attorneys for medical care or living wills and living trusts and things like that. For those of us that are really avoiding it, even if we get the paperwork together, sometimes we'll put off getting it notarized and making it legal and making it something that's actually usable. And it actually are things that make it easier for our loved ones to know what we want and how we want things to be handled when we can't make those decisions ourselves. So Rainbow Mobile Notary Services will come to your home, your office, or wherever you set up the appointment to notarize these papers, get them complete for you. And if you don't have the form, some of them are just very simple, basic forms that they will bring with them. And if you want to take advantage of this, and I support you in doing so because it is so important to have all these things in order, you can contact Rainbow Mobile Notary Services at 480-518-2090. That's 480-518-2090. Or you can visit their website, which is rainbowprof.com. rainbowprof.com. So I want to thank Charles King for his support of the show, and I encourage you to make use of those services and get those papers in order and rest a little easier. Now, we're going to turn right into the topic for today's show, which you'll understand why the services of my sponsor are so appropriate, because the topic of today's show is getting older or getting better with age. Getting older or getting better with age. And my guest today, who I'll be introducing in just a moment after I say a few more words, is Hal Milton, who's written a book called Wising Up, A Life Without Regrets, which basically deals with assessing our lives as we're getting older. You know, there are 80 million of us, and I'm included in that at age 55, of the baby boomer generation. It's the largest generation in history. And yet, most of us are basically ignored. If you look in magazines and newspapers, you know, in society, we don't deal with our older people. We don't consider them elders. Elders being the wise ones that pass on the consciousness of a society to the youngers. And this is a very important aspect. It's something that's really missing. On a way to give an example here is, two of my favorite TV shows were canceled this week. One of them is called Joan of Arcadia. The other one is called Judging Amy. real short-sighted by CBS, if you ask me. And the reason they gave for canceling those two shows, which are actually have more substance and such a fullness to what they do on the shows in terms of the characters and the issues that they deal with, is because the demographics, the age range of the viewers are too old. They're not part of that 18 to 29 or 35 or whatever it is age range where they think they sell the most. Now, if you consider that over 27% of our society today are part of this baby boomer generation, 80 million people, and they're saying that it's not worth them to reach out to that population in order to keep these shows on the air and sell products in doing it. So this is an example of corporate America ignoring the fact that there are many of us, and I'm telling you something, it's not just that generation that's watching them. I know, I mean, God bless my cousin Bill and his wife Hinda. Every Friday night, they sit down with their two children, Zachary, who's 14, and Sarah, and they watch that show, Joan of Arcadia, together. And then when the show's over, they turn off the TV and they talk about what they felt and what they experienced and what they thought about the issues that were presented. And even though Joan of Arcadia is basically, in terms of its approach, has a more Christian or Catholic framework, I was raised Jewish and my cousins are Jewish, and yet it's universal in terms of the issues that are being dealt with. So with all this being said, I want to read a quote from chapter one called The Adventure of Aging. And then I'm going to bring Hal on and we're going to get into some very important conversation about these issues. And I remind all of you out there that this is a live call-in show. So if you're in the Phoenix area and you want to participate in this conversation or ask some questions, the number is 480-949-1310. That's 480-949-1310. And if you're listening over the Internet, as I know some of you are, it's the same number, 949-1310, area code 480. So page 3, chapter 1, and he quotes Michael Vecchio from a book called 52, and it goes, "When adults of other eras taught their young to respect your elders, they were respecting the old one who lived within each young person, strengthening the old one, giving the old one a source of pride so that it would be up to the task when it was needed. But our culture insults and shames the old one at every turn, so we are left with only the young one with which to face infirmity and death. But the young one is unprepared for this, for the young one is incapable of believing in death. With its audacity, the young one gives us great strength at the proper time. But that time passes, and after it passes, only the old one can give us the strength we need." And to me, that says an awful lot, like I said, about the youth culture of this society and how there's so much wisdom within so many of us that is being missed and that dies when the body dies. So with all that being said, I want to welcome Hal Milton to the show today, author of Wising Up. Hal, you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Well, thank you for taking your time on a Saturday to be with us today.
My pleasure.
I want to get into your definition of wisdom. Now, when you say wising up, a lot of this book is about tapping into the inner wisdom that we all possess. How do you define wisdom?
Well, what I feel is that we do have innate wisdom, and it gets covered up over the years by conditioning about our culture, the way we learn to live and survive in our society. And what I feel is that it gets blocked, and wisdom needs to be harvested. We need to go into our history and harvest that which we know. And then if we do that, then we bring that to the forefront and we're able to make more conscious choices for our life. We're able to live more fully and completely, because the wisdom that's there that we've gained from our experience can then assist us in our lives now. It can assist us in maybe changing some patterns that aren't working for us.
Mm-hmm. Now I'm a therapist, and I know that identifying patterns and changing patterns is actually one of the fundamental things that we're doing in therapy. Now, I know you come from a different background, but you're a teacher, you're an ordained Unity minister, you've done a lot of healing work through a form of body work called Rolfing, you've worked as an athletic coach, you've actually done a lot of counseling in your time, and I understand you're, you know, near 80 at this point?
I'm 71.
71, okay. Sorry about that, but...
Okay.
and a lot of your wisdom comes with developing a consciousness of your life experiences and how that has played out. And throughout your book, you talk about doing like a life review.
Right.
Which is the sort of thing that I think most of us are doing all the time, but mostly on a subconscious level. Your book encourages people to bring it up to a conscious level.
Exactly.
This book comes from your own life review, from what I gather.
Yes, it does.
So talk a little bit more about how the book came about and how these tools and techniques have really helped you come to be the elder that you are today.
Oh, thank you. Basically, you know, I started this out to write a letter to my grandchildren. I wanted to leave a legacy for them, or part of a legacy, so that they know their grandpa, that they know what made him tick, what his experiences were in life, what his belief systems were, and how he was in the world. And it started out that way. And as I got into it and did my own, you know, life review, as I had done my life review and reflected on my experiences, because I think we all have experiences and that teaches us, but I think what really works is the reflection on the experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And as I did that, I realized that this was a great tools for my generation and mm-hmm. for the generation coming up, because I feel that so much is blocked and there's so much conditioning and so much cultural mores that keep us from looking at our own truth.
Mm-hmm.
And so we wind up pretending our lives, and I find that many wind up pretending their lives and never get down to their own truth.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I wanted to really share. That's what I did for myself. And the title of your program, Tell the Truth Faster, is just so much aligned with the way I think.
Yeah, actually, I underlined a number of passages where you actually talked about the importance of truth in it, because it really rang true for me.
Yes.
Now, you talk about this being a really good book for people, you know, at a certain point in our lives, the midlife crisis period, the 50s, the 60s, whatever.
Uh-huh.
But I've said this on the show many times, and I've known this about myself. When I saw myself as an old soul at age 17. When I was a kid, there was a wisdom and maturity about this that the other adults all saw in me, and
uh-huh.
even the other kids saw in me, and that I always felt a little bit different because of it, and that the older I get chronologically, it's like my body is beginning to age, but it feels like more of a youthfulness seems to be coming up from within.
Mm-hmm.
And you address that in this book too, that youth is not necessarily a chronological thing. It's more of an attitude and a perception.
Absolutely.
And so talk about that for a bit, that, you know, I mean, this book actually would be very helpful for people in their teen years too, not just in their 20s and 30s, not just people in midlife period.
Exactly.
The wisdom in here is wisdom of the ages, all ages.
I agree. Well, just as Socrates said over 2,500 years ago, an unexamined life is not worth living.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to know ourselves is one of the keys of perhaps our why we're here. You know, our spiritual work is to really get to know ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that so much, so many of the people are really afraid to really look at themselves and uncover some of the basic parts when the truth is that they're beautiful and loving and caring. It's all the stuff on top that has been conditioned on top of that that people get caught up in.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like uncovering that. It's kind of like a simple, we've lost the simple process of going and really being honest with ourselves. Because I think once the truth comes out in our consciousness, it changes our whole being. Many of us have never even looked at why we believe the way we do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how we became the way we are. Did we ever stop and consider why we believe this or that?
It's more blind obedience to family patterns and family laws and rituals and religious laws and rituals instead of really questioning.
Exactly.
Where does that blind obedience stem from, do you think?
Well, I think it comes from ego, if I can use that word, mm-hmm. of wanting to be accepted, wanting to be part of. And when we're very young, we need that. We need that, and that's what we learn. But we seem to take that with us through the years and never go back and challenge some of those learnings that we had at a very early age when it was very appropriate for us.
Mm-hmm.
But as we get older, we don't need to keep some of those patterns. And yet there are many adults, and you as a therapist can probably validate this, that many people are operating as if they're teenagers and they're in their 40s and 50s and 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And they're operating as, you know, their emotions, their attitudes are one of teenager. And you can't change those attitudes unless you're willing to look at it and see where they come from.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you talk about actually challenging those belief systems and the laws and rituals that you were raised in within your family, I know that it's a difficult thing. Let's say someone in their 20s who's beginning to question the religion they were raised in and the structure of it and things like that as they're beginning to see how they fit into a culture and society. But I think also if grandma or grandpa started all of a sudden making changes and maybe even reading your book and all of a sudden living a different life,
yeah.
because they're feeling like they want to belong in this world and in their bodies in a different way, people will start thinking that they're probably getting Alzheimer's and going crazy. So there's a real threat to that. So what
it
do you
is.
Tell people like that?
It really is. A person needs to be, and it doesn't have to be all at once either, Stuart. It's something that's a process. I mean, all of this is a process, and probably goes on and should go on all of our lives.
Right.
Constantly reflecting and questioning and doing it. It doesn't mean that you have to change all at once and shock everybody. You do it in your own time. You do it as it feels comfortable. As you change your belief and your ideas, the behaviors are going to change automatically.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that in your book you talked about your first marriage.
Yeah.
And how all of a sudden you began to question and you began to find that maybe there's not a mutual path for you and your wife in the form of the marriage. How, I mean, obviously that happened gradually and over
yeah.
years, as you say, but how did you handle that transition and how did your ex-wife handle it?
It was tough. It wasn't easy, you know, divorce and I had three children at that time, and that was very painful to separate from them in that way. And I just had my belief, and I did it as lovingly as I could, and it just happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once you make up your mind and once you're clear on your direction, no matter what it is, whether it's going into a new job or a new business or a new profession, once you kind of are clear that that's what you want to do, spirit kind of comes in and aids us along the way.
Mm-hmm.
Not that it's not painful at times, because everyone's pulling you back. Nobody wants you to change, you know. And so you just, you know, it's part of your process of getting clear as to what you, what one wants
right.
for themselves. You know, how do I want to live my life? You know, and that's a great question because I don't know how many really stop and really think about how do I want to live my life really? And coming from that real heart place and that real place inside, being truthful to ourselves as opposed to wanting acceptance and wanting to be acknowledged, you know, for what you're doing.
Right. And living one's life really, you know, again, may shake up some people around you. You know, we've talked about this on the show many times before, that when somebody starts making changes in their lives, it shakes up the, say, family system.
It
threatens other people who have defined roles in the system. And when one person is trying to change their defined roles, and which means changing the system, others are going to try and suck them back into doing the same thing. We deal with this with addictions all the time. When someone actually gets into recovery, you know, they don't have the black sheep anymore, the scapegoat anymore and stuff, and they have to start taking a look at their own issues, or they keep trying to get that one individual to relapse again so everything gets back into the dysfunctional equilibrium.
Exactly.
So when you have someone who say, well, let's use me, I don't mind being personal here and self-disclosing. I'm 55 years old, and I certainly agree with you that self-exploration and self-awareness is a lifelong process and something I've been involved with for years. But I know that over the years I've made conscious changes in focus and direction based on my own intuitive sense or experiences that came up, that I chose to listen to that inner voice.
Exactly.
How do you, in your book, I know you have a lot of good tools at the end of each chapter, how do you, in your book, you talk about spirit and God a lot in the book, but not necessarily it being about religion, but how do you in this book help people start listening to the inner voice and trusting that it's guiding them in the right direction?
Well, there are a couple of chapters actually about how to kind of get in touch with your own inner spirit, and for the want of a better word, it's like meditation, of getting quiet and taking some time to be quiet, or to at least be aware of what's going on, because we're getting messages all the time, but we're so busy doing things that we don't pay attention to those messages that are coming through to us in different ways.
Or we're afraid to pay attention to
them. Or afraid, exactly. So, you know, meditation is certainly one way where you take a time for yourself and just be quiet. And I do go over some different ways people can come to their own quiet place. And just that alone helps us become conscious of messages, whether it comes in at that moment when we're quiet or when we're out washing the car or doing the dishes or something, we're just more conscious of spirit communicating with us in some way.
Mm-hmm.
And it might be an event, it might be an idea, it comes in different ways. And the whole book and my whole premise is, how do we become more conscious? How can we really live a conscious life? And what do we have to do to live a conscious life? And it's not something that happens overnight. It is a process. But we have to be willing to go into the process and move on with it. Wherever someone is, they can start.
Mm-hmm.
And the rewards of this are grand. The rewards of this is really feeling fulfilled and really feeling some of the joy and really feeling like we are in charge of our life rather than our life just taking us along.
Mm-hmm.
It's very exciting. It's very, very exciting.
Yeah.
But it does take a willingness to do it, like anything.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes a practice.
Well, definitely practice, and I want to talk about that. But my question to you is, you beautifully divide up your focus here into, you know, three, let's say, sections in terms of self-awareness, conscious living, and awakening to wholeness.
Right.
Now, I think it's important, even though we've really talked about all three of those already, that we put them in those terms, because I think it's a really good way of people to organize what this is really about and what your book is really about.
Uh-huh.
So talk briefly. What is self-awareness? What is conscious living? And what is awakening to wholeness?
Okay. Well, self-awareness seems like I've just been talking about that. It's how do we become more aware of what we're doing, of how we're living, why we're living the way we are, what is it in our lives that work and what is in our lives that doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And so we become more aware of how we want to live, and that's learning about ourselves. That's the examined life. It's learning how to examine our life so that we are self-conscious, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And let's see, the other one you want to...
Conscious living.
It all that ties together. It's, again, being conscious of the choices we make. So many, I feel, make choices for the wrong reasons. You know, they're not really conscious choices. They appear like conscious choices, but the reasons are coming from a different place. It's coming from wanting to be accepted, or wanting it to be easy, or... it's some kind of conditioning. And so conscious living is very important, again, to feel the success or feel the fulfillment of us and our lives and how we're living our lives.
You had a quote in here that I think is from Rabbi Zalman Schachter Salomi.
Uh-huh.
And it's on page 182 under Life. We choose to live life to rise out of limitation, lack, and difficulty into greater life. We choose life. We are immortal beings who are saging, not just aging.
Right.
In the words of the rabbi.
Right.
We always have a choice of how we think about a situation or ourselves. Our lives are a series of choices.
Exactly.
You know, to buy into that,
yeah,
means you have to start taking responsibility for your life.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That I think is, again, one of the things that get more people into therapy than anything else is their resistance to taking personal responsibility, of being in the mode of blaming.
Yeah.
So, you know, talk more about this before we get into awakening to wholeness. Talk more about this issue of taking personal responsibility and becoming more aware that you are, that we all are making choices every day since the moment we're born.
Yeah, I think, Stuart, I think that it's real clear that the choice is always ours.
Mm-hmm.
And we make choices, I feel, from our conditioning, from not only our early childhood, but from the culture, from advertising, from all the... That's the whole cue to advertising, is try to get you to buy what they want you to buy.
To choose
and
them.
So it becomes a an unconscious kind of choice. And this is when I say that many times I think we make choices for the wrong reasons.
Mm-hmm.
It's coming from that background of items or of behavior or of attitudes that we really didn't choose consciously.
Mm-hmm.
We kind of absorbed them. We caught them during our lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really important, if we want to live fully, to live consciously, is to look at where these ideas, where these attitudes, where these behaviors came from, and then we can change them. We have the choice then to change them.
Mm-hmm.
And choose a different way of looking at something.
Mm-hmm.
Or a different way of choosing something, so that we're not caught up with someone else's belief systems, that we can really become our own persons. And, you know, it's really simple, and it's really challenging.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not an easy thing to do, And yet it can be easy if it's what we want to do.
Right.
If we really want to take charge of our lives and take responsibility for our choices, for our attitudes, then it can be changed. We can change.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that difficult. It just needs a willingness.
Well, and even the choice to pick up a book like yours, Wising Up, Life Without Regrets, even that choice is a choice to consciously say, you know what, I want to start dealing with this stuff. I want to start becoming more at peace with what chronologically is happening to me and what's happening to me physically. And I want to actually consciously learn what I can in order to learn how to make choices differently than I've made choices, or to value the choices I have made.
Yes.
You know, this is not just about finding out what we've been doing wrong or what's not working.
Yes.
It's also, and it's so important that, you know, that people get that, just like in therapy, it's not just about coming in with the problems and issues. It's also about coming in to do a reality check and to do some reinforcing of what does work. What have you learned that really you've been using well, and you may find that you have more together than you think you do.
Exactly.
So talk about how the book addresses that for a moment in terms of, this is not just about trying to get you into the pain of what's wrong.
Yeah, well, exactly. But if you look at it, if you look at all of these things, you find that. You find those things that are working for you. It's not just the things that aren't working for you. Most people will look at what's wrong rather than what's right.
Mm-hmm.
But in the process of doing your homework, so to speak, and really becoming conscious, you find out those things that are right for you, and then that you've been doing right and that you want and that you've chosen that.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives you more confidence, too.
Right.
It makes you feel great because you're more consciously aware of that rather than just having it be rote.
Mm-hmm. It also deals with communication, because if you're dealing with all this stuff, you're also, like you have people doing the life review, you have them asking some very tough questions in the journaling or in the, you know, audio journaling. If people aren't into writing, you know, you suggest that they use a tape recorder, which is a great idea, that this bridges over into, just like it did with your first marriage and stuff, you know, making an assessment, but also saying, where is my communication working and where is it not working?
Right.
And so the book has a lot to do, just as much to do with communication. In fact, my show last week was about communication and relationships.
Yeah.
And talk about how doing this actually adds to people's intimacy value and the quality of their relationships and communication.
Well, you know, one of my beliefs, Stuart, is that you cannot not love someone that is telling you the truth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that when somebody loves you enough to tell the truth, you cannot not love back. And so learning to be truthful in communication and taking those risks, I find that many times people don't want to take the risk of being honest because they think it's going to hurt the other person,
mm-hmm.
and they don't want to hurt the other person. Well, there's ways of modifying truth, but not to falsify it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't go around trying to hurt people purposefully,
right.
But with saying what's really going on for you and taking responsibility for your feelings,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't have anything to do with the other person.
Right.
This is what it does for me. And if you preface some of this like that, it's not so devastating for the other person,
mm-hmm.
and the other person will really appreciate it. Appreciate the truth, and if they don't, then I'm wondering if that's the kind of person that you want to have a relationship with.
Right, right. No, I agree with that. In fact, the number of many shows I've said that very often people may use the excuse, well, I didn't tell them the truth because I didn't want to hurt them.
Right.
When often it's more about, I didn't tell them the truth because I didn't want to deal with my own discomfort of what
exactly.
I'd have to face once I did that.
Exactly.
So it's more of a self-centered, selfish thing as opposed to an altruistic thing of avoiding hurting someone else often.
Right. Right.
So
exactly.
So now let's get awakening to wholeness is the third focus.
Talk,
I know, again, we've been talking about all this, but specifically as you deal with the moving into the sense of wholeness, how does the book address this awakening to wholeness?
Well, if you've been doing and working with all the things we've been talking about, we do awaken to who we are. And who we are is holistic. It's not just one part. We're not just a physical body. We're not just a psychological body. We're not just a mental body. We are a combination. It's an integration.
Right.
And as we do the work in all these areas, we find that we become really much more integrated and much more whole.
Mm-hmm.
And we're operating and living our life in a more holistic way.
Mm-hmm. More of a gestalt.
More of a gestalt, of fullness.
From what I read, I know you've had some gestalt training, too.
Yes.
Yeah, I actually studied with Gertrude Krause in Miami for 2 years.
Ah, uh-huh. So you're familiar with that.
Yeah, in a past life.
Yeah, right. Right.
But anyway, that sense of wholeness, again, I mean, like I opened my show with, that I deal with things from a holistic perspective when it comes to mental health, which is exactly what you're saying, an integration of the body, mind, and spirit of who we are.
Yeah. So we really, the whole thing is a concentration on the quality of our lives, you know. It's not, and that wholeness is part of the quality of how we live. You know, it's really to broaden our whole self-image, you know, because so many of us get stuck in narrow self-views, self-images. And it's like, how do we broaden and become... you know, become wider, become more, living with more goodness in our life.
Mm-hmm.
How do we do that? How do we open ourselves up instead of walking around with narrow views? Is that clear?
That makes a lot of sense to me, and I think it is coming across clearly.
Yeah, good.
We talked earlier about this issue of honoring our elders in our society, which our society, I think, is really lacking in what to do. I had a guest on a couple of times named Don Kilhefner, and being a gay man, he, you know, myself, and knowing his work in the metaphysical community within the gay community, he divides it into this three components in all societies, but in the context of the gay community, there's the youth, there are the mentors, and there are the elders. Unfortunately, in our gay and lesbian culture, like in the greater society, the youth is valued above all else.
Right.
And yet there's a history within the gay community that is being lost because the elders are not being attended to, and the generation of mentors, for the most part, have died through the AIDS crisis.
Right, right.
So there's this need to really kind of bring this elder consciousness into it, just like the Native Americans. I mean, it's like they're a prime example of what it is to value elders in one's community and turn to them for guidance.
Right.
And, you know, that's just not happening.
It's not, and it needs to be a conscious choice. You know, one of my teachers used to talk about the computer, you know, what happens when our computer crashes. And we lose all that information, all of our software. We lose that information.
Right.
Well, our elders are doing that. You know, we die off, and we don't gather, we don't save the information. And that's where our elders come in. We need to tap into them and tap into that wisdom. And the elders have to have a consciousness, as our boomers get up into that category. Have to have a consciousness of sharing, of doing the mentoring, of really sharing their wisdom and not letting it die off.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think also that comes with, I mean, there are a lot of people who are maybe grandparents or in that generation where they're hurt because they're not being more respected when they're not really living a life that's respectful
to
others.
Right.
So it's not just the age, it's the intention and the integrity that you're living the life so that you are a role model for the healing of society as opposed to the dividing of society.
Absolutely.
So that's where your book, again, comes in handy so that, you know, there are, for those people in their 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s who really want to do an assessment to find out that, you know, how to get into that elder role and do it with integrity, or to assess whether they're really doing it now, even if they think they are, they may not be.
Exactly. And many people don't want to look at that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's too comfy, or their lives are just the way it is, and they don't want to really look at doing anything different.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's the way it is. If people are willing, they can. There are tools, there are ways, there are groups that I've outlined in my book also. There are ways to tap into that wisdom and ways to pass it on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's very important, and I think it's a shame if people aren't willing to look at themselves in that regard.
Right. Now, as we're coming to the last 10 or 12 minutes of the show, I think it's important that we talk about legacy.
Okay.
I know that my mom's mom, my grandma Selma, who passed away when I was in graduate school, she didn't have a lot of money. She, you know, she lived on Social Security, and hopefully that'll still be there in our future. but no matter how much she needed the financial support from my parents and my aunt and uncle and stuff, there was $2,000 that she kept in a savings account that she would refuse to touch because it was important to her and the consciousness of her generation that when she died, she left an estate to her two daughters.
Right.
And even though it was $1,000 each, that there was a need that she saw that as her legacy that she was leaving behind.
Right.
Which to me, her legacy was that when I was 12 years old, she sat with me and taught me how to bake because she was getting too old to stir, and I came up with the idea of her just sitting there and telling me what to put in and when.
How wonderful.
And so legacy of my grandmother is spending that beautiful time with her and remembering every time I bake something. In fact, I even have some of her recipes and some of her baking pans.
How wonderful.
Every time I bake something, I'm thinking of my grandmother, Selma. That, to me, is her legacy, not the $1,000 that has long since been spent by my mother or my aunt.
Right, right.
So talk about what legacy really means.
You talked about mentoring before. You know, sometimes we just catch attitudes, like if grandparents or elders would just work next to, stand next to the younger person, like you did. You mixed her batter and stuff. You catch the attitude, and that's the legacy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we catch attitudes. We're not necessarily taught attitudes. We catch them from just being, just living and being around people that are conscious or do have a sense of passing something on for whatever reason. And so our legacies come in many ways. It comes from relationship. I think also a legacy is for an elder to really be responsible and not leaving a mess for the people behind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it might be wills, trust, as you talked about early on in the
right.
show. You know, taking care of business so you feel more grounded and secure because everything, your legal and personal business is handled, even to the extent of, you know, where are the keys kept? Where are the combinations to this lock or that lock?
Right.
Where's the water faucet? So people that are going to take your estate or work your estate after you're gone don't have to guess at these things. They know where everything is and it's followed. And it's being really responsible in leaving that information for those that come after you.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives us a very good feeling that we've taken care of our business that way.
Right.
And I think that's important. And I do outline several things in my book of ways to deal with that, a checklist of things to do.
Actually, your appendix is very inclusive of all that stuff in terms of, you know, what's where and what the kids need to know, and
you know, healthcare directives,
right,
all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, what to do with business issues, you know, valuables,
exactly,
all that stuff.
And
I think it's also important that wills that are left are not going to end up creating more division within the family you're
exactly
leaving behind.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
Like what my mom's done is, you know, basically she's told my two brothers and I where her will is, what's in it, who's the executor, and all this other stuff, and, you know, we're fine with it.
That is fantastic, because so many times there are surprises. I used to tell my dad, I said, I don't want any surprises.
Mm-hmm.
You know, tell me what's going on. No surprises after you're gone, you know.
Because people and need to realize what they leave when they leave that surprise is they leave a hurt feeling somewhere.
Heck yeah.
And sometimes there's enough baggage to be cleaned up by the kids from what went on in life to leave something behind that they can't even communicate back to you, you know, in a physical form is I think, a very hurtful thing to do.
Yeah, I think so, too.
So,
yeah, very
so, much so. So legacy is important. I know that as a values exercise, a lot of people in school are suggested that they write their own epitaph.
Yes.
You know, and yes, very often that awakens people to, oh my God, how do I want to be remembered? What
right
do I want to leave behind? What kind
yeah
of life do I want to be remembered for?
Great exercise.
And yeah, I think so also. And
yeah,
I think your book does that sort of thing for people.
Yeah, yeah, I know? Think so. Yeah, I've gotten really nice reviews on it, and I'm very excited about it getting it out there.
Uh-huh. Well, and duly so. I mean, With my ADD, this is the sort of book that I remember in college, you know, waiting to the last minute to write term papers and wishing I had started earlier, because now it's really interesting to
right
me. This is the sort of book where I've read about five chapters in it that I know that I wish I had started it earlier, but
yeah,
I also know that I will finish this one.
Oh, well, good.
So I just wanted to share that with you.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah. Yeah, it's not a book you kind of sit down and read. It's not like a novel.
No.
You do read a chapter and kind of digest that and read something else and
mm-hmm
digest it. It's a process. It's more like almost a handbook for your growth.
Right.
A handbook for psychological uncovering and spiritual uncovering and physical uncovering, you know.
It's also one of those
books.
It's
a process.
It's also one of those books that I could see myself when I'm doing couples counseling to have both partners read at the same time, chapter by chapter, and discuss each chapter as they're going through it.
That's fantastic.
You
That's
know,
fantastic.
Because the things and the consciousness that it'll bring up gives them a framework that I think makes the truth-telling and the communication a little bit more structured and easy than just the free-floating stuff.
Yes. Yeah. So, great. That's
wonderful. So, we are down to our last 5 minutes or so, and I want to kind of leave you some time to talk a little bit more. I know, first of all, where people can get the book. I know you have a website. I'd like you to tell people about the website and,
okay,
and anything else you want to share.
Okay, great. Well, basically, I do have a website. It's halmilton.com, www.halmilton.com, and from there, they can see a little bit about me and what I'm up to, et cetera. And it does have links to Amazon and to the publisher of the book and to an email, you know, to communicate with me. And the book can be ordered at any bookstore if they don't have it in stock. Amazon has it. Barnes & Noble has it online. So people can purchase it that way or go to my website and just connect in with the connection. Let's see. I just think that it's very, very, very worthwhile to start this process, no matter what age you are, is to look at it. Just reading it, even if you don't do the exercises at the end of the book or the suggestions at the end of the book, and some of them you'll want to do and some of them you won't want to do, but even if you don't, just reading it just implants ideas and thoughts that can help transform people. I really believe that.
And I think the whole purpose is basically what your subtitle suggests, life without regret.
Exactly,
you know?
Exactly.
You know, you take a minute and talk about that and how this book actually helps you clear up that.
Well, there are points that it helps you become clearer in your communication. Mm-hmm. You learn how to kind of forgive yourself. I mean, you look at what you're feeling guilty about, or what's gone on in your life that you feel someone wronged you or you wronged someone. You learn to forgive that. You learn about, again, communication by telling people, you know, that you love and that you love them, you know, not being afraid to say that. You learn to practice acceptance as you go through the process. You learn to practice acceptance, both of yourself and others. There's a whole section on how do you have fun, you know, participate in activities that are fun for you, not just the things that one thinks they should do.
Or always told themselves they couldn't do.
Yes, exactly. You know, it's like doing things that are fun. And then taking care of business is part of it, you know, getting all your affairs in order. Mm-hmm. And also to cultivate that inner life, because that's certainly a part of us too, you know. Take up meditation or prayer, or go to a church of your choice, or check out another spiritual group or something. You know, find something that really speaks to you and works for you.
Right.
And then find ways to give it away, you know, to serve. I always felt you can't give anything away because whatever you put out comes back.
Right.
So find organizations or a cause that you have a little bit of passion about and volunteer.
Mm-hmm.
For a certain amount of time. You know, give back to the community and share your wisdom. And then, of course, eating well, learning about diet, which I have sections in my book that help you learn about what's right for you, because there's so many diets and so many ways of eating that people glomp on one thing, or there's a book on one thing. If you look at the diet books out there and the eating books, you know, it's loaded. And it's like each person is an individual, and we have to find out what works for us personally. And so there's ways of exploring different foods that work for you, not on what someone else said, but what you're experiencing in your body.
Right.
And then exercise, of course, different ways to do exercise, from walking to joining a yoga group or whatever else turns you on, playing tennis or whatever else. And then learning to just really trust what you know.
Right.
I think those
are the cornerstone of the whole thing.
Yeah, I think that's really kind of sums up, you know, kind of the end result of living a life without regrets.
Right.
You know, those are the things that you kind of come to. Yeah. It's very exciting, and it's fun, and it's joyful, and if you can get someone to work with you on it, it's even better, because it's like anything, partnership is great.
Right. I want to close soon by reading a paragraph here on page 183,
uh-huh.
and it reads, instead of simply adding years to our lives,
right.
We can start adding life to our years.
Yeah.
We don't want to come to the end of our lives with the feeling that we haven't lived. We can use those moments of our lives that we have judged to be insignificant as tools to renew and re-energize ourselves. As we wait for the red light to change, as we stand in line at the supermarket, or while we wait at the doctor's office, we can take advantage of these moments to reflect, pray, relax, and find our centers of peace instead of distracting ourselves with resentful thinking, magazines, radio, or constantly looking at others who seem to be holding us back. These moments provide opportunities for energy boosts rather than drains.
Yes.
And I think
that is a nice key part in the book.
Yeah, it really kind of sums up all of what it means to live in the present.
Yeah.
And I think that's really a lot of what your book's talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
Hal, I really want to thank you. I think this is a book for all ages, and I don't just mean chronologically.
Yes.
And I wish you well, and I wish it well, and... again, if you want to find out more about Hal Milton, you can go to his website, www.halmilton.com. You can order the book from that link. You can go to Amazon and order it. You can also, if you forget that, you can always go to my website, tellthetruthfaster.com, and in about 2 weeks the show will be archived on there, so you can listen to it again or suggest someone else go there to listen to it if they missed the show.
And you can also get the link to Hal's website from there, too. So tellthetruthfaster.com. I want to thank you so much for taking your time and for writing this book.
Oh, you're very welcome. It's my pleasure.
And to all my listeners, I want to thank you for the support and for listening. And to my sponsor, Rainbow Mobile Notary Services, and Charles King, I remind you that you can reach them at 480-518-2090 so that you can start getting your affairs in order and make it easy and convenient through his service. So I want to thank all of you for listening. This is Stuart Altschuler on KXAM in Phoenix, Arizona, wishing you all a great weekend and that you all wise up real quickly. Get a copy of this.